Esther, I'm ready. Is Conrad in here? Oh, he is good.
And you're on.
All righty. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for our regularly scheduled commission meeting, which I would like to call to order right now. Okay, so just for starters, I'm sure that the reporters in the room are expecting some opening comments on the DAPL issue that's on the agenda. But because this would be the first time the commission has even really talked about it, I'm not going to make any comments on that until the admin portion of the meeting, when we will actually have a chance to walk through what's been documented with our office and go through that then. And after that, we'll be happy to answer whatever questions you have, but that will be after the admin portion of the meeting and after the regular time for Q&A, so we won't have talked about it yet. So I'm going to defer questions until after that. But there is some other exciting news I would like to talk about today on a positive note, and that is we have hired a new compliance director at the Public Service Commission. He's with us today. His name is Conrad Crockford. He started yesterday. And this is a new position, and it's reflective of some of the changes we've made at the commission as it relates to the 10% budget reduction. What we did as an agency is we took the opportunity to really reexamine how we're doing business, what we're doing. We took the governor's direction to heart and examined what we're doing and could we do it differently? Could we do it better? Could we change some of the things that have been happened typically over the course of the last 100 years? We identified some major changes that we're going to be proposing in our grain licensing program. Commissioner Chrisman has really spearheaded a lot of those changes and has some exciting proposals. We're going to be talking about some of those this afternoon, in fact, to the grain folks, the grain dealers, as they we meet with them this afternoon. So what we've done with our compliance division is we've restructured, we consolidated a former director position, moved it over to this position, and created a compliance division that will be the new home to our licensing work, which is the grain area. The rail program, the rail safety program, which was really kind of just attached to Daryl Nitschke as our executive secretary, he's been overseeing that in the last year, but it hasn't really had a permanent home. And the weights and measures program. Those are all compliance-related functions that have inspectors who go out and work with industry to make sure that they are in compliance with the rules and regulations of North Dakota. And we think that there's some great efficiencies to be gained in this approach and just a better overall office structure to be gained with this as well. And so, Conrad, welcome. We're pleased to have you. Conrad comes to us. He has a bachelor's degree in political science with emphasis on public policy and a master's degree in homeland security and compliance regulation. He spent 4 years in the U.S. Air Force, discharged as a captain, and he served at the Minot Air Force Base, where he and his wife fell in love with North Dakota and wanted to stay. After that, he was employed as a site leader for RailServe, Inc. for 4 years and was then promoted to regional leader of operations, overseeing operations of 7 crude oil and ethanol terminals nationwide. So as you can see from his resume, he has some pretty good compliance background and some good experience in the rail industry, and those are areas that he's going to be involved in overseeing and managing here at the commission. So we're pleased to have you on board, Conrad. Thank you for joining us and spearheading this new area of work at the commission. And that concludes my opening comments. I'll pass it over to Commissioner Chrisman.
I was going to go the same direction as you in introducing Conrad, so I'll just add a couple things that you may have brushed over. Conrad originates from a small town near Cleveland, so he's very excited, of course, these evenings, and especially tonight going into Game 7 of the World Series. And you mentioned the grain licensing, the rail safety, and the weights and measures. And, of course, weights and measures is kind of the quiet thing that we do here that probably touches the most people's lives the most often. But, of course, the last thing, and the reason I thought most of the press was here, the always controversial auctioneer and auctioneer clerk licensing program also falls under Conrad's purview.
It is often in the media.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, Randy. Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Everybody's given Conrad all these accolades. I'll tell you, he's an Air Force veteran, so the bantering has already continued, so we'll have to discuss about that. And anyway, welcome aboard, Conrad. I'm excited he's here. Just a couple, I'll call them fun facts. Today is North Dakota's birthday. 127 Yay. Years, so in case you've forgotten that, it's a tradition for the newest employee to bring donuts. So that's always exciting. I'm sure there'll be some events around the state. And, Julie, you'd be happy to know that the UND Fighting Hawks are ranked number 11 in the country in football. The Bison are hanging tight at 4. I predict they meet in the playoffs this year, so we'll see how that plays out.
We talked about this over dinner last night.
I think it's going to happen this year. And finally, on a little more serious note, I just want to take a second to kind of prep the battlefield, if you will, on item BK3. It's an item where Xcel Energy has asked for an amendment to the rate case, and I'll talk about that more when it gets to the actual amendment. But last week, I don't know, some of the members of the media, I'm sure, probably saw a press release that came out from Xcel Energy that they're basically going to, their quotes, take our wind leadership to a new level. We're going to save customers hundreds of millions in energy costs over the next 20 years. And quite honestly, I didn't even know about this till I saw the press release. And so it's very interesting that I think the commission has held very strong on our procedure of if you need energy, we'll look at it. If it's low cost, we'll then make the appropriate determination. But they continue to lean heavily forward into doing their wind development portfolio, no matter what we say to them. And somewhere in the very, very last note of the press release, it says, if approved by regulators. But I think they're really driving their message of they are going to continue developing wind no matter what the need is, no matter what the decision of the North Dakota regulators are. So I think it was also very timely that I had scheduled a meeting with the leadership in Xcel Energy, a month or so ago, that I was scheduled to be in Minneapolis last Thursday. And so I talked about this with their leadership, and I said, I understand it's your company to run, and I appreciate that, but really, aren't you hearing what we're saying to you fellas and ladies about what we think energy development should look like? And their point was, we'll talk about it when the time comes. And I said, we've already talked about it. That's why we had the rate case. That's why we filed it, making sure that you have to come in front of us for ADP before you do these kind of things. So the motion today that BK3 all know it's a hearing, and you can tell I may be slightly biased on it, but I'll tell you that we've already made our decision on this once, and they asked us to look at it again, so I will certainly look at it again. But I think what frustrates me a little bit about this is just the driving of the message of wind is going to save customers $20 million. It even goes as far as to say that they're going to have a wind farm in Dickey County. So immediately my phone started ringing off the hooks from people down in Dickey County about what's going on here, what's going on here, what's going on here. So I think that, we try to have these PI meetings, periodic information exchanges, where they should at least tell us what's going to be coming. So our first hear is not when we hear it across a press release or we hear it on the radio. That's not the way for an investor-owned utility to operate with the regulators that they work with. So that's my kind of opining, and we'll have that motion coming up. But now to extend this discussion a little bit, I have not even talked to my colleagues about this at all, but what I'm going to be proposing a discussion time today, and I guess I'll throw it out there now, is that North Dakota, that the commission goes out and has a discussion with North Dakota about what they want with wind development. We have our hearings, and our hearings have gone from being, we've had some that are 3 hours, some that are 15 hours, but I think it's time to have a discussion with the state of North Dakota about what they think of wind development. Because we go to these hearings, and it was in the press release, too, that one of the great reasons for this wind farm is it's going to create millions in landowner benefits. It's going to have millions of dollars in tax benefits. I'm an energy regulator. I'm not an economic developer. It's not my job to go out there and develop the economy of the local state. It's my job to keep low-cost energy reliable. And so I think it's timely that we go out and have some sessions around the state like we did in the Clean Power Plan, where we say, okay, here's what is coming out of D.C. What do you think about it? And then we adjust policy accordingly. If the state of North Dakota wants a 20% mandate for renewable energy, then so be it. If they right now we don't. We've got a 10% goal, which we've long since met. So I guess my frustration level is peaking about the wind development and not having the full discussion with it, because we've had isolated discussions about, I'll give you an example. Director Steinwand and I visited a couple months ago, and he has some concerns, the agency has concerns about what's going on with native prairie in the state for wind farms. There's concerns about impacts to species, and so these wind farms, they never get a chance to get fully vetted by all these agencies in the timeliness that they want people to make decisions. So I think a perfect example, this is a chance for the director to come to these hearings and say his piece, what he thinks, or his people's piece about wind development. So at a bare minimum, I'm going to go out and do some of these. I'll talk with my colleagues and see if we can get something set up where the whole commission goes out. But no one is backing off on the development of these renewable energy sources, no matter whether the need is there or not. And if that's the way the state wants to go, if that's the way our leadership wants to go, then so be it. But I don't think that's the way it should be. It should be low-cost, reliable energy. So I've pined enough, Madam Chair. But I don't know if you didn't see that press release last week. It was, I call it bizarre, the way that thing played out.
Thank you, Brian. I also had some concerns with that news release. the way it was positioned were my concerns, and I think that it feeds to what you're talking about in these meetings. I support this idea. I think it's really timely and important that we get out there and have really upfront conversations with the public about what's going on in the utility industry. There is a major transformation of the utility industry occurring nationwide. It's being driven by regulation. It's being driven by new technologies and technology development. It's being driven by shale gas. And it's being driven by policies, state policies. And so all of these things are converging. And it's also being driven by the fact that our current infrastructure, a lot of it is reaching its useful life. So it's needing to be replaced. And so replacing it triggers, what do you replace it with? Triggers, does that create an opening for renewable? But how do you back up renewable? And what are the costs to customers? All of that is happening with not nearly enough conversation and understanding amongst the paying public. And so that's the kind of conversation I think we ought to be having with the public about what's going on in this utility industry. And when news releases like Xcel, and I did have some words with Xcel about that news release too, and urged them to provide a little bit more truth in advertising moving forward in terms of when you say customers are going to be saving millions of dollars because of these wind projects, then if I'm a customer, I expect my rates to go down. I expect my bills to go down. That's not what's happening. What they meant to say is compared to other sources that we'd be replacing this with, we will save millions, but we're still going to be spending more and customers are going to be paying more. But that is not the message that customers are hearing. I hear frustration from customers frequently, not just Xcel, but all the investor-owned utility customers who are saying, and the co-ops, why, if this is so cheap, why do my rates keep raising? They keep raising because of some of the issues I talked about, the transformation of the industry, the aging infrastructure that needs to be replaced, and the incorporation of renewables and new regulations. So all those things coming together are going to result in increased costs for customers. There's just no way around it. We're seeing these rate increases, and they're going to continue as this transformation occurs. So I want customers to have a better knowledge base and a more thorough understanding of what's happening in the industry and what's driving these costs. So let's do it. Get the meeting started.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right.
Since we're going off on this subject a bit, I'll just add to what you just said, Madam Chair. You know, you mentioned the question of whether the savings are real or, as you suggested, just in comparison to something else, some savings. And I would say a huge factor that doesn't get highlighted is the fact that whether they're real or just in comparison to something else that would be more expensive, whatever savings there are primarily there because it is being paid for out of tax money through all the government subsidies. And we're in a country with almost $20 trillion in national debt, and our state budget isn't looking so hot right now either. And so those subsidies are eventually going to come home to roost, and you just drive by a elementary school somewhere, those are the folks they're going to be paying for our spending spree right now.
Good point. Okay, well, with that, let's move on to the agenda. There's a number of items on consent. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. Okay, I just have one item on the regular agenda. It is a pipeline application approval. I move the Commission adopt the order on recommended findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, issuing certificate of corridor compatibility number 195 and route permit number 206 in Caliber Bear Den Interconnect LLC 12.75-inch crude oil pipeline, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-16-420.
Second.
On July 5th, Caliber Bear Den and Interconnect filed an application with the Commission for this pipeline project. On September 7th, we deemed that complete and issued a notice of hearing, held that hearing in Watford City, and what was the date of that? October 7th in Watford City. This project will consist of approximately 5.3 miles of 12.75-inch steel pipeline with nominal wall thickness of 0.188 inches. The maximum operating pressure of the pipeline will be 600 pounds per square inch, and that relates to the thickness of the pipe as well. So if you're wondering why that pipe is a little thinner, the maximum operating pressure is less than a lot of the pipes that we've been citing. Maximum design flow rate of the pipe will be approximately 75,000 barrels with normal daily throughput of approximately 50 barrels. This pipe will be constructed in accordance with the DOT, U.S. DOT regulations in 49 CFR Part 195. The transmission pipeline will originate at a truck offload facility connected to the DeVore terminal approximately 7.2 miles south of Watford City and will extend to the northwest to terminate at the Dakota Access Pipeline's Watford City terminal. So this is a connector for the DAPL pipeline. It will include truck offload stations at each end of the proposed line that will tie into the line. The total anticipated cost of the pipe project is approximately $12 million, and with an anticipated cost of approximately $8 million for the pipe and approximately $4 million for the associated facilities. We did the normal consultation with all the appropriate agencies as a result of this application. We received comments, and those have all been incorporated into this order. In a response dated July 8th, the SHPO concurred with no significant sites affected for the project. There were no exclusion areas intersected by the pipeline, and so none will be adversely impacted by the project. There is one avoidance area. A residence is located within 500 feet of the pipeline route. The route is on the landowner's property and was placed within 500 feet of the residence at the owner's request to minimize other impacts to other areas of his property. One area of geologic instability consisting of landslide deposits is also located within the study area. That's an avoidance, but it is avoided and not crossed by the pipeline. Caliber testified that a supervisory control and data acquisition system will be installed as part of the project. It will monitor pressure, flow, and temperature 24 hours per day, 7 days per week. In event of an emergency, the system will automatically shut down the pipeline. They've coordinated with local authorities and emergency managers for emergency response. They will partake in the one-call excavation system as well. So with that, all the key pieces seem to be in order in this project, and I would move passage of this order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And I have staff working on a number for how many DAPL connectors there are, so we'll have that later because I suspect somebody will ask that. I don't know how many we've approved yet, but we'll have that shortly. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
You're up.
RC1, my first agenda item. I move the Commission close out contract number AM-770-16 with Martin Construction Incorporated for completion of construction services at the 2016 Bowman Foxhole AML Reclamation Project.
Second.
On August 17th of this year, the Commission entered into a contract with Martin Construction of Dickinson for reclaiming an abandoned surface mine about 7 miles north of Bowman. The project involved the elimination of nearly 1,100 feet of high walls at the mine that is in both Slope and Bowman counties. There were two mine pits at the site, and they're separated by a county road that runs on the county line. About 40,000 cubic yards of spoil material was used to backfill the high walls, and about 10 acres were reclaimed at the site. Earthwork at the site started on September 19th and was completed already on October 4th. The fertilizing, tilling, and mulching was completed on October 10th. The project manager, Jordan Burns, who is here with us today, this is his first project that he has managed for us and brought to completion. So thank you, Jordan. Job well done. And also our seasonal inspector, Alan Erickson, inspected the work throughout the project, and Jordan determined that all the work and conditions of the contract were satisfactorily completed by Martin Construction. The original contract was for $89,300. We had a change order. It ended up being $90,447 and change, so a little over $1,100 more than the original contract amount. The contractor has certified that all employees, subcontractors, and suppliers used in the project have been paid, so all the work under the contract was satisfactorily completed, and the AML division recommends the contract be closed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Just thanks, Jordan, for your work in this first project. Jim, it looks like we're passing the gavel. You're sitting next to him and moving it on. And, Jordan, just so you know, if you look ahead to 2056, that's when you'll be sitting in Jim's chair, and then some young guy will be sitting or gal in your chair. Thanks, Jordan.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC2, I move the commission approve revision number 39 to surface coal mining permit number BNCR-9702 held by BNI Coal Limited to revise the post-mine topography around Mincota Power Cooperative's bottom ash inert waste landfill and to make some minor updates to the permit.
Second.
Kind of an interesting case how the industry evolves here with this one. On June 3rd of this year, BNI proposed to revise the post-mine topography around Mincota Power Cooperative's bottom ash landfill, where three parcels of reclaimed land, totaling 87 acres, will be redisturbed to use spoil as fill material for closing the landfill. As the surface owner, Mincota developed the inert waste landfill for bottom ash disposal in a double pit area that was mined in 2001. Oliver County and the Department of Health issued permits in 2002. The commission then approved final bond release number one for the inert landfill in October of 2004, so 12 years ago. Following the effective date of that bond release, the Division of Waste Management had sole regulatory jurisdiction of the landfill, and variance area 8 was approved by this commission to allow an 87-acre protective buffer area between the reclaimed landmine and the active disposal operation. So bottom ash and other approved inert waste landfill disposal began in 2004, but within just a few years, Mincota developed a market for bottom ash, primarily for use by the DOT for wintertime highway application to improve vehicle traction and hasten ice and snow melting. Through the ensuing years, various beneficial uses have developed for bottom ash and have negated the need for the long-term disposal landfill. The initial landfill closure began in 2015, since it just wasn't needed anymore. A revision 39 here proposes to redisturb three parcels of reclaimed land, the total 87 acres, to obtain just under 2 million cubic yards of spoil to accelerate landfill closure and complete the reclamation of that buffer area. The Division of Waste Management has stated its concurrence with the landfill spoil cover thickness, the closure topography, and the topsoil and subsoil redistribution depths, which will be 6 inches of topsoil and 24 inches of subsoil. The landfill post-closure land uses of cropland and native grassland will be consistent with surrounding post-mine land uses and that's being discussed between the Division of Waste Management and Minn Kota. So this revision is considered a significant alteration to the approved mining and reclamation plans and was therefore subject to the notice, hearing, and procedural requirements. BNI submitted the affidavits of publication for the newspaper notice indicating that it was published in the Center Republican, which is the county paper there in Oliver County, and the Bismarck Tribune for four consecutive weeks. We received no objections to the revision apps for those agencies or advisory committee members that received notifications or from nearby landowners or the general public. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this application and respectfully recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3 was withdrawn, and so we're moving right on to RC4. I move the Commission issue an order in case number GE-16-654, granting the request of CHS Incorporated of St. Paul, Minnesota, to operate a facility-based grain as a facility-based grain buyer at Gwinner, North Dakota.
Second.
CHS's new facility here is a 196-acre campus with a state-of-the-art grain loading facility served by a 120-car rail loop with 3,800 feet of spur track. As a grain shuttle loading facility with 2.4 million bushel storage and a dry fertilizer hub plant. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the request be approved. I will just point out this facility-based grain buyer, that the difference between that and a regular elevator that we most typically see, this is a federal licensee, and so they're licensed federally, and so they get a grain buyer license to do business with us.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion?
I will point out two things. Of course, Gwinner is such a neat community there in Sargent County and home of the Bobcat plant and was the headquarters for many years. And Eugene Dahl is our newest North Dakota Rough Rider member, Hall of Fame member, and he's a native of Gwinner, and his wife's father is actually the founder of Melro that ultimately became Bobcat, and he became a partner, and the whole family helped grow it into what it is today. And so it's kind of an exciting history of Gwinner, but I think we've touched on some of that before. But we never seem to get to Lisbon, and that's another of my favorite communities, just 15 miles north of there, up in Ransom County. And one of my fun little tidbits about Lisbon is that it's home of the Scenic Theater in downtown Lisbon. The Scenic Theater, as Dave Thompson knows, was founded in 1911 and is the oldest continuously running theater in the United States.
Have you ever been to the Scenic Theater to watch a show?
No, I haven't. Thanks for pointing that out.
Next campaign, see if you can make that one of your stops.
As long as they have something playing that doesn't have any of the actors or actresses who irritate me.
And that's probably a growing list.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Lastly, RC5, and with the Commission, approve the joint motion withdrawing the request for a formal hearing in case number RC-15-755, revision number 27 to surface coal mining permit number NAFK-9503, held by the Falkirk Mining Company, and close the case.
Second.
I really hope thousands of people across the state are listening to this, because here's how the energy industry and the public can oftentimes work together, and it doesn't get all the presses when things don't work out as well. On April 5th, the commission approved revision number 27 to the permit held by the Falkirk Mining Company. The approval was subject to the right of any person that is or may be adversely affected by the decision to request a formal hearing in the matter. The revision updated the mining and reclamation plans for another five-year permit term. On May 4th, we received a timely request for a formal hearing from the attorney for Mr. Robert Nelson, the owner of land downstream from the mine, from the permit area. Mr. Nelson's land will be affected by water that is discharged from water impoundments at the Falkirk Mine. The formal hearing was scheduled for May 25th, but before the hearing, the two parties together requested a continuance of the hearing to allow further communications between themselves to avoid the need for a hearing in the matter. The parties communicated over the summer and early fall to work on a resolution of the disputed issues, and on October 31st, we received a joint motion withdrawing the request for a formal hearing in the matter. The filing states the parties have amicably resolved the dispute themselves.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Is that it for you, Randy?
That completes my agenda. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Commissioner Kalk, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot 4 points in my opening comments about these wind farm sessions we'd have. There's four things that I think that for sure I'd want to get the public to comment and see what my colleagues have to say if they want to add more. But it'd be the construction, the operations, the decommissioning, and the site remediation of the wind farm. So when we have the public input, if you will, you know, as a beginning point, what do they think about those 4 points? So I missed that in my opening comments. All right, Madam Chair, three items. Item BK1. I move the commission adopt the order granting certificate and issue a certificate of public convenience and necessity number 5895 and Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resource Group, Inc., 115 KV Transmission Line, Dickey County, public convenience and necessity, case number PU16538.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In July of this year, MDU filed for an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct and operate approximately 15 miles of 115 KV electric transmission line from an existing substation at Ellendale to the South Dakota border. The North Dakota segment, this is a North Dakota segment of a 40-mile Ellendale to Leola, South Dakota transmission project. September 7th, we issued the notice of opportunity for hearing. Provided until October 11th, anyone wanted a hearing could do so. No one requested a hearing. And what this project really is the it's a public convenience and necessity. The company needs to come in front of us to get our thoughts to see whether we think it's needed. Doesn't have to be sited because it's below the siting threshold. But what this project really is, it's basically the underbelly transmission build out of the Big Stone line, Big Stone to Ellendale line. And so what it comes down to is the total cost of the project is about $17 million, which, Tammy and Karen, I believe it's about 70% that you're going to try to bring the North Dakota customers, correct? So when we look through this, really it shores up the reliability underneath that major transmission build-out. So I believe it's certainly needed. They'll interconnect with the existing substation at Ellendale, and they'll build a new substation in South Dakota. So certainly a good project. I like to see projects like this to continue to enhance the reliability of the grid. And I just look forward to moving forward because I know they're always in a hurry, I said, to get this transmission built and so they need it so it's available when they need it. So everything appears to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl. And we do have a map if anybody's interested, but basically comes out of the Ellendale sub, runs west a few miles, runs straight south down through Forbes, and then kind of jogs into Leola, South Dakota. So it's a pretty straightforward route. Okay, thank you. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the order granting certificate in Otter Tail Power Company's 416 KV and 12.5 KV Rugby Project Public Convenience and Necessity, case number PU16625.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. Had we not had the Dakota Access discussion, it would have been the year of the transmission line. The Otter Tail's worked very closely with Jerry on staff and others figuring out what the transmission needs are up in the Rugby area. And with this order today would approve a PCNN allowing Otter Tail to build two parallel 4160 kV transmission lines approximately a half mile in length and two 12.5 kV lines approximately a half mile and 1.2 miles in length, all in the general town of Rugby. If you could, for those of you who've been to Rugby, the southeast, more the east side of town, the golf course is in there. I've lost a few golf balls over there. That's where the substation is at, and generally the transmission build-out is going to be west of there into town. This project is really going to shore up the reliability of the Rugby area. It's going to replace some aging transmission lines and substations in there. But one thing that this is also going to do, it's going to move Rugby's load more into the MISO system. Not completely, but a big chunk of it. So this MISO-SPP divide, with some of the challenges that are occurring there, I think this should alleviate some of the problems. And there also has been some challenges up there with outages between Otter Tail and Central Power, where there just wasn't enough transmission in that area. So this should be a very worthwhile project to help out. And, you know, we haven't seen really any transmission. And yesterday we had an informal on transmission build-out in Minot. Today we're in Rugby, so we're starting to see more transmission build-out in other parts of the state than just the extreme east or the west. So everything is in order here, and the cost is total cost approximately $2.5 million. Approximately 1.7 is transmission, and 0.8 is the related distribution assets.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And last but not least, item BK3, I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing regarding a request to amend the Commission's order in Northern State Power Company's electric rate increase application case number PU07776.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In October of 2014, wait a minute here. It wouldn't be October of 2014, it'd be October of 2016. The Northern State Power Company, so Esther, can you make sure we grab that on the order? In October 24th of 2016, Northern State Power Company filed a motion to amend the order, which basically, as I was harping about my opening comments the day before we saw the press release, basically the company is requesting to amend the order that we issued in December of 2008, which was a settlement agreement involving from wind farms to transmission to timeliness, what the future of XL Energy is going to be. But one of the main hallmarks of that settlement agreement was that that XL Energy would come in front of us for an advanced termination of prudence to get our thoughts early if they were going to construct any type of major facilities, 50 megawatts or more. And so that was a bedrock principle of that order, in my opinion. So the company has the right to request an amendment, which they are doing. So this today sets the notice. Anyone requesting a hearing must do so by December 14th of 2016. Everything is in order for their request. This today is a request for an opportunity for hearing, but I know for myself I've already asked Pat to put on scheduling for an informal on this. But I would like to add this to discussion with my colleagues to see if we want to go to just a formal hearing. I think an informal for me gives us what we perhaps would need to make a decision, but I'm not against having a hearing. And a lot of times if one of us knows we want to go to a hearing, let's just schedule it right away. So that maybe if it's okay, Madam Chair, we could talk about that. Mm-hmm. But for this order, everything's appropriate.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to clarify, so this just makes it, the company just requesting for the opportunity to seek a waiver.
That is correct, but staff is also...
And those would come on an individual case-by-case basis.
Correct, and the staff already has paperwork filed with them to request waivers on things. So there's many things that have been filed in the last couple of days. And
okay, so if we give them the opportunity to request a waiver, we can still decline the waivers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You could do lots of different things.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you. I will say that your portfolio illustrated quite well what we were talking about and what I was talking about in particular about the changes that are occurring in this industry. We had the first one, a transmission project. A lot of investments occurring in transmission to increase the capacity of the grid, to allow for more renewables, to allow for more export of energy from North Dakota and back into North Dakota. refreshing of aging infrastructure, the Otter Tail stuff. And then lastly, this request from Xcel to perhaps waive their need to have a advanced termination of prudence for some of those wind farms. So this is the kind of thing that is hard on an individual case-by-case basis for consumers to grasp, but really important for them to understand kind of as a whole, because it does have an impact, a significant impact to their rates long-term. So I'm hoping to engage our friends in the media in participating and helping get that information out to consumers in a meaningful way, so that you can help educate them through us as well. Okay, so it's 1:45. Normally we take a short break for signing. We'll take questions on everything except for the Dakota Access issue, which we'll be addressing next.
I have a question about something that was on the consent agenda, BK4, about MDU, the rate suspension. Has MDU now filed for the temporary rates?
Yes, Dave. They filed their rate request. They've also filed for interim rates. And so the advocacy staff and advisory staff are still deliberating through the paperwork on the interim rates. But what this does today is suspends their rate increase. So it's a procedural. So if we don't do this today, the rates go into effect. Yeah. So I suspect that our next meeting we have mid-November, we'll see a package coming forward on what the interim rates look like.
What is your time frame in terms of interim rates?
Well, interim rates become effective immediately.
But when do you have to make a decision on that?
I'm not sure the actual of the law. I think that as quick as we can is usually what we do. So Jerry, is there a decision on interim rates? I know we've got 30 days to suspend. I think it just seems reasonable that we do it as soon as we can. But, Dave, that doesn't – I think the goal here is that we talked about putting them on this agenda, but there were some things that I wanted to go through with some of the transmission. There are some things in the rate case that we're trying to sort out right now with – basically, there's some things that are coming out of a generation rider that are going to – they're asking to move into rates. There's some things that are coming out of the transmission rider that are moving to rates. We're going through the interim rates right now because they're not as straightforward, in my opinion, as normal because of some of the things we're having to gel together. But the next meeting, I would say we will have the interim rates on the agenda. And then we're looking at trying to schedule public input meetings that January, February, early March time frame. And then hearings, we're still deliberating back and forth, probably that April, May time frame, because we do have a seven-month deadline from when the application is filed to make a decision on the rate case unless parties agree that can be extended.
Anything else?
Can the public ask a question? I'm not media, but I'm public.
On anything that we've already covered, but not on Dakota Access at this point.
Right. What I would just like to maybe make as a comment is that as a public member of the public, I'm all for open and transparent and accountable government. Mm-hmm. And so when I came in today, I had read in the newspaper that there was a meeting today at 10 a.m. And then when I looked at the agenda, I didn't see anything about what the newspaper said that there was going to be discussion on. So one, the agenda didn't line up with what they were saying in the newspaper. Two, it didn't say where the meeting was being held. And so I came to the Capitol, and I went downstairs, and I arrived, and I asked at the desk, the information desk, I said, where is the Public Service Commission meeting? And the lady did not know. It was not on her calendar that she had a list of meetings. It was not on the monitor that's when you come into the hallway downstairs. It wasn't on that monitor where that meeting was. And so then she said to go to 13th floor. I go to 13th floor, and that door is locked. And so then I did find some employee, and I said, is there a Public Service Commission meeting? And she said, yes. And I said, are they public meetings? And she said, yes. And I said, where are they held? And so then she directed me to come to this floor. Now, one of the things that we could do better as a state government is to have that much more accessible. And I know how easy that is when you're used to coming to a place and you're used to conducting business and you're used to things falling on a chart or an agenda a certain way, and you understand it. But as a public person where there's been an issue and then now we want to be coming to a meeting or want to hear what's being discussed, the accessibility was not convenient. It was not very easy to come by. So just as a comment more than a question, I don't know if you're aware of that, but that's something that we could do better.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. We do not want people having a hard time finding their way to our meetings or having a hard time finding when they are, where they are. We'll look into that, and maybe Stacy, who's sitting right behind you, can talk to you more in detail about where you looked, what you saw, so we can fix where you were finding it. The agenda I'm looking at right now that I have lists the location and the time pretty clearly, and so we'll work on making it more accessible and user-friendly to the public for sure. Thank you for sharing those comments. Okay, so we'll take a brief 5 minute break, and then we'll be back in for the admin portion of the meeting, which is where we'll talk. We'll move up the agenda item for Dakota Access to the top after consent, and then we'll answer questions, and then we'll move on with the rest of that agenda so everybody who is interested in that can go on with their day. Okay, so 5 minutes. Thank you.